We have been losing the food in our food. For the last 50 to 100 years, the concentration of minerals, vitamins, and proteins in the fruits and vegetables of the United Kingdom and the United States has declined. Simply put, the decline of nutrients in our crops means there is now less food in our food. In the case of one mineral, copper, the decline has been measured at 80%. We became aware of this amazing fact somewhere back in the 1940s and have been monitoring our loss ever since. But today we pause to ask, what happened to the food in our food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 623rd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Elias Caius who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producers Carol Stafford and Parmley Taff are out there working the phones today. Folks, say hello, Parmley.
Hello.
There you go. Folks, we all pride ourselves for being green these days, but the real green revolution took place after World War II, when the swords of war were turned into the plowshares of peace. Agriculture adopted new ways to manipulate the environment with fertilizers, irrigation, and pesticides, and also selected new plant cultivars. The resulting increase in productivity was truly astounding. In 1943, Mexico imported half its wheat. By 1956, Mexico was self-sufficient in wheat. And by 1964, Mexico exported 500,000 tons of wheat. This green revolution made it possible to grow ever more food with ever-diminishing resources of land and water. And as a consequence, the world's population boomed. But wait, though we are able to grow more food with less resources, we are not able to produce more nutrients. In fact, we are growing more food containing fewer nutrients. And so today we ask, what happened to the food in our food? Let's see. Here today to help us dig for an answer, we have Dr. Donald Davis, who's a research associate with the Biochemical Institute, University of Texas, and also with Biocommunications, which is a research institute in Wichita, Kansas. Dr. Davis, welcome aboard. Are you on there, Dr. Davis?
Yes, I
there
can still
we
hear
got
you,
him.
Only very faintly.
Okay, so we'll try to turn you up here. University of Texas, a researcher, and also with the Biocommunications Research Institute of Wichita, Kansas. Tell us a little bit about your work, Doctor.
Well, I originally trained in California and called myself physical chemist, but along the way I became interested in nutrition, and I ran across the books of Professor Roger J. Williams, who was here at the University of Texas and founded the Biochemical Institute here, where more vitamins were discovered than in any other laboratory. And I ended up coming to work for him in 1973. And since that time, I've worked on a lot of different nutrition-related projects, and this topic that you're bringing up today is one that I've been thinking about for, I guess, nearly 10 years now, working on, published a few papers about.
Well, Doctor, who we always ask, like to ask our guest, who pays the way. So who pays you to look into these subjects?
I'm sorry, I'm still having great trouble hearing you.
Okay, I'm going to try a different microphone here. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties today. But the question was, who pays you to look into vitamins and mineral content of food for your research? Who pays your way?
Who paid me? Is that what you said?
Yes.
I didn't have any particular funding. The University of Texas and the research group that I was in paid my salary at the University of Texas, and I also worked at this project associated with the Wichita Biocommunications Research Institute, which is privately funded research and medical clinic organization that receives no government funding.
Fair enough. Well, can you hear me a little bit better now?
No, I'm sorry.
Huh. Well, let's see, maybe I'll try to turn up my microphone a little bit. Does that work?
It was much louder during the news and during your introduction, and then suddenly something happened.
Okay. Well, we'll try it again. Doctor, what do we mean when we say there is now less food in our food?
Why do we say that?
Yeah, why do we say that? Research indicates that there is...
There are three main lines of evidence pointing in this direction, which I summarized in a paper that was just published this month, actually. As you mentioned in your introduction, the earliest kind of evidence began to accumulate in the 1940s and 50s, and a review of this was published in 1981, and it's called the dilution effect.
Mm-hmm.
Agricultural scientists began to notice in the 40s and 50s that when they applied fertilizer to their crops to make them grow faster and bigger, and when they used irrigation and pesticides to similarly increase the yields, they noticed that there was a tendency for the nutrient concentration, some of them, to go down. And they call this the dilution effect because what's going on is that the plant is drawing minerals out of the soil or making vitamins and proteins internally using energy from the sun plus what it gets from the soil. And it makes these things, but when you fertilize the plant, do other things to increase the yield, you also increase the amount of plant a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that you get more increase in the amount of plant than you do get an increase in the amount of nutrients. So they're diluted in a larger volume of plant.
So I hate to use this analogy, but it...
So that was the first idea that anybody had. Surprisingly, when I read the agricultural literature, as I said, I trained in chemistry and then switched to nutrition, and now I've been reading the agricultural literature, and this dilution effect is very commonly cited in the literature, but it's surprisingly little known in the nutrition community. Then the second kind of evidence pointing in this direction began to appear about 10 years ago. Those were based on going and looking up the amounts of nutrients, vitamins, minerals, protein, and so forth in foods that were published in the 1940s, 1950s in the United States and in England, and comparing those historical data with modern data that were published in the last few years, for example, by the U.S. Department of Agriculture here in the United States. The first paper on this was published out of England in 1997. We followed up, our group published in 2004, a similar paper finding that out of about 12 nutrients that we looked at, there was good evidence for a decline in about half of them. Declines ranging from 5% to up to about 40% on the average. Now, these
kinds of historical studies are 40%?
Are inherently hard to do and uncertain. You can't really compare just a single food 1950 versus now because there's so much uncertainty in the numbers. So what we did was we looked at a large group of foods. In our paper, it was 43, and we looked at the average increase or decrease, and that's where the numbers that I'm talking about came from, 5% on the average decrease in protein, for example, and 38% decrease in riboflavin, one of the B vitamins. We've come along to the third kind of evidence that...
But we're going to have to take a quick break, and I'll see if I can't work out the technical difficulty here. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking with Dr. Donald R. Davis, Research Associate with the Biochemical Institute for the University of Texas and with the Biocommunications Research Institute in Wichita, Kansas. Having a little technical difficulties today, but we'll work our way through it. The question of the day is, what happened to the food in our food? Dr. Davis says we're losing at the rate of, we've lost nutrients at the rate of 40% and more. Where did that food go? Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here, and today we're talking about the food that went missing from our food. We have with us Dr. Donald Davis, University of Texas, and the Biochemical Communications Research Institute in Kansas, and we're talking about a little bit about the food that went disappearing over in our food over the last 50 to 100 years, and we're not talking about a little loss, but a substantial loss, and we're talking about the vitamins and minerals and proteins in our food. And Dr. Davis was explaining how we're able, through the green technologies of the Green Revolution, to grow more plant matter, but not more nutrients. And I hate to use this example, Dr. Davis, but I will anyway, because perhaps it'll help people understand. In the illicit market for cocaine, people have been known to take a big block of cocaine, and then which, is, of course, is white powder, and mix it with half again more white powder, so you get twice as much white powder, but only the same amount of cocaine, the active ingredient in it. Is that kind of similar to what we're talking about here?
Yes, that's a great example. Very similar to what's happening. Although I would add that in the case of diluting cocaine, of course that's being done on purpose, intentionally, for financial reasons by the people who do it. Agriculturists do not intentionally do this. It's a unintended side effect of the quest to get higher yield.
So we're not really getting a higher yield, are we? So we're not really getting a higher yield, are we, Doctor?
Not getting a... we're getting a higher yield of nutrients, too, but they're diluted so much that the concentration of the nutrients in the food is less, so that when we eat them, unless we can consume more calories, which we don't need, we're going to get less nutrients.
Well, Doctor, we talk a lot about, you know, the food that's missing in our food. What do we say when we're talking about food? What are the nutrients in our food that have gone missing in general?
The best evidence, the strongest evidence, is for calcium and phosphorus in vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
There's also evidence from one paper for declines.
So those are minerals,
vitamins,
right?
But the most of the work has been done on minerals and foods and also protein. There's been a lot of work also on protein in wheat. 100 years ago, wheat typically had 18% protein or so, and nowadays it's more typically down around 12%.
So that's a loss of 6% in proteins. And in your paper, you talk about vitamins. You look at the vitamins, and you of three of five vitamins that you looked at, you detected loss of 15 to 38%. And then in copper, or in some minerals, copper especially, a loss of 80% in copper?
Yes, that 80% value comes from the paper that was published in England. The U.S. Department of Agriculture did not report copper amounts in foods back in the 1950s, so in our work we were not able to study copper, but that 80% figure comes from the U.K. From a period of about 1940 to 1980, 80% loss on the average in 20 vegetables that were studied.
80% loss. That to me is that's extraordinary loss. Do we really need copper?
Yes, certainly. It's one of the 45 or so nutrients that we absolutely have. We can't live without it. One of the symptoms of deficiency of copper is elevated cholesterol levels, for example.
And it seems like we're certainly suffering from a lot of elevated cholesterol levels these days. Well, Professor, how do we know the food in our food has really gone missing? You know, senior citizens are always telling us that food used to taste better when they were young, but all of us, the young folks, always look at the senior citizens and think that they've just gone dotey because food tastes like it always tastes. So how do we really know that food is...
another possibility is that older people lose their sense of taste, but I think they're probably onto something. When agriculture researchers breed plants, their major focus over many years has been to increase yield. Everybody likes higher yield because farmers get paid by the yield of their crops, and this is true for organic farmers as well.
But this isn't necessarily true for wheat, because I understand that wheat ranchers, wheat farmers sell protein content as well.
True. That's absolutely true, because especially for making bread.
Mm-hmm. Well, is that how we know that the protein content of wheat has been going down, because that's how farmers sell it?
I suppose, but all I know for sure is that there are data going back a long way to the 30s and 40s of the wheat protein content, and it's been studied how that varies with the yield of wheat, and there's a definite inverse relationship. The more the yield goes up of the crop, the more the protein content tends to go down.
Well, how do we know what kind of nutrient content food had 100 years ago? How do we measure the change?
Well, this is based on analytical measurements, laboratory measurements, where the food is harvested, it's cleaned, dissolved chemically, and then analyzed. And 100 years ago, we didn't know what most of the nutrients were, so there's not much data that goes back 100 years. Protein, yes, but vitamins, minerals, people didn't even know what they were 100 years ago. But beginning in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, there became more and more awareness of the vitamins and minerals that are in foods that we have to have. And, of course, chemists and biochemists were interested in measuring those amounts, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture has been reporting values going back to the 1930s. Of nutrients. Over the years, they started out with just a few nutrients and measuring those and reporting them, and then over the years they gradually increased the number of nutrients. And when we did our study, we chose to go back to 1950 as kind of a compromise, going back quite a ways, but not all the way back, because earlier there weren't so many nutrients known and measured, and the laboratory methods were not so well developed. So we went back to 1950, where we believe that there's reasonable accuracy of these numbers, and there were a reasonable number of nutrients that were reported then. But many others that we wish had been measured in 1950 were not, so we're not able to compare those. But I recently learned about a study. It was done in England, where it was a single farm, and they've been raising wheat and other crops on this farm for about 160 years, and they have stored samples throughout this whole time. And recently, there was a paper published measuring the mineral content in these wheat samples going back over 100 years. And this is a rare example where we can know pretty well what's been going on, because here these old samples can be measured by modern analytical methods.
Doctor, what did we find in that study?
They found substantial declines in everything that they measured beginning about 1940. Before that, the levels were holding very constant.
Wow.
And
so can we hold that thought? I'd like to pick that up when we come back, because that's an absolutely amazing study. Folks, what happened to the food in our food, beginning somewhere around the 1940s or right after World War II? The food in our food went missing. Where did it go? Right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, where did all of our food go? Somewhere in the neighborhood of 80% of the mineral copper has disappeared from some of our fruits and vegetables. Upwards of 40% of other vitamins and minerals have disappeared. And 6% of the protein in our wheat has disappeared over the years. And we're looking for where those nutrients have gone. Now we're talking with Dr. Donald Davis, who's telling us a story of a farm in England that grew wheat for over 160 years. And Dr. Davis, you talked about up until 1940, the wheat, the food in that wheat, the nutrients held firm. Why was that?
Well, let me correct. While we were on the break, I looked up the paper, and what they said in their abstract was that it was stable between 1845 and 1960, a little later than I remembered.
Well, then what happened in 1960, or why were they able to hold it firm all those years, and then what happened in 1960 to cause the nutrients to disappear?
What happened then, I'm reading from the abstract of their paper, it coincided with the introduction of semi-dwarf high-yielding cultivars. So here we are back to this issue that when you increase yield, you tend to decrease the concentration of minerals.
So in essence, what the farmer did was bought into the notion that the new varieties of the Green Revolution, the new varieties of wheat, could allow him to grow more wheat in less space. But in doing so, he was able to grow more wheat, but the wheat that he was able to grow had less nutrients in it. Is that the way it was?
That's exactly right.
Huh. Amazing. So
there's another interesting aspect of this same study, which was done, by the way, they call it the Broad Bulk Wheat Experiment, established in 1843 at Rothamsted, UK. They not only measured the nutrients in the wheat that was grown, but they also collected and archived samples of the soil over the same period. And they measured the amount of minerals that were in the soil, and they found that the amount of minerals in the soil remained constant or even increased during that time. So that rules out one of the ideas that a lot of people have had, that these declines are caused by depletion of minerals in the soil. In this particular case, there was actually an increase in the soil of most of these minerals because of the use of manure and inorganic fertilizers over this period of time.
So they were using fertilizers over that course of time, and in doing so actually built up the soil so that there was not a situation in which there were fewer nutrients, there were actually more nutrients. But then that pointed, of course, to the fact that there must have been a problem with the new genetic hybrids, right?
That's right. Exactly right.
Huh. Well, I'm going to try to put Craig on the air. We'll see if we can get this phone system to work. Craig, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hello, Michael. Can you hear me?
Yes, I got you. You
okay,
can hear
well,
me. Okay.
I can't hear you, but I think, you know, you said you can hear me. So
I can hear you, Craig, so go ahead.
I can hear you now for the moment. Okay, so I've always had heard that all the soil, the farm soil, agriculture, depleted of the mineral selenium, but I had really more important thing I wanted to
Craig, that's a great point, and I'd like to have Dr. Donald Davis pick that up, because that's what we've heard as well. Dr. Davis, Craig suggests that he hears where the continuing cropping of land depletes the mineral selenium. What do you know?
That is possible. selenium is kind of unusual in that most plants do not require it, and they pick it up passively. If it's there, they pick it up. If it's not there, they don't. If the soil is high, the plants will be pretty high, and if there's no fertilizer added, it may deplete the soil of selenium.
Okay, good. Let's go back to Craig then. Craig, we're going to pick you up for your second part of your question. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I did have something else I really wanted to say. Like when I go to the, certain stores, like when I get in Santa Cruz, I go to those, genuine health food stores that you guys have over there. And I I pick out some, I just use onions as an example. Now, there's a lot of other examples I can use, but one of the most telling is like onions. Now, they're way different. The organic onions I see like at the farmer's market and say like, Stackalife or Food Bin, they're labeled organic.
Craig, you're going to have to tell people what you mean by genuine organic, because people like who are tuned into the food chain across the country won't know what you mean. So go ahead.
Okay, genuine, when I say genuine organic, is that they're smaller, like they're not just drenched with fertilizers. I can go to Whole Foods and I see a whole different kind of organic, and they're a lot bigger, these onions, and same with a lot of other produce that are labeled organic in a bigger food chain like Whole Foods.
So
like at the farmer's markets where they're labeled organic, they're smaller, and, they're not as cosmetically as pretty, but I don't care. They taste better and they taste stronger. Now, to me, I don't know. There's organic and then there's organic. I get the feeling that these guys, the suppliers for Whole Foods, these guys are using, or fertilized, maybe even synthetic fertilizer.
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, good. maybe we have something figured out here. Let's try picking up Dr. Davis here and see if we can work with him at the same time with this magic telephone system here.
Okay.
Oops, we lost Craig. But Dr. Davis, can you hear me now?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, bingo. Let me ask you this. Craig suggests that he can get giant organic onions at a supermarket, and when he goes to the farmer at a farmer's market, the onions are smaller, the organic onions are smaller. Is that what you're talking about? You probably find more nutrients in the smaller onion than the bigger onion?
That's certainly possible. That remains to be proven by scientific evidence, but that would be my guess that you would find that. When I go to the grocery store, by the way, and something, especially if it's priced by the pound, I tend to look for the smaller fruit. I've heard that it's well known among winemakers that small grapes make better wines than big grapes.
That's certainly what I've heard. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. What I've heard with respect to grapes is that stress is what gives grapes the character and the taste. If you plant grapes on a rugged hillside in chalky soil and throw rocks at the plant over the course of years, the plant will produce much more character and much finer wine than if you plant the grape in the valley floor and irrigate it and feed it and make them grow great, big, huge, giant grapes with a lot of moisture in it.
And that's quite possible, and that goes along with some evidence that has been accumulating the last few years that organically grown foods tend to have more phytochemicals in them. These phytochemicals are often antioxidants, and they're beneficial to us, but the reason that they're in the plants, many of them, is to protect the plants from...
We're going to take a quick break, Doctor, but hold on, please. Hold that thought. Folks, this is The Food Chain, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Give us a ring. Where did all of our nutrients go? We seem to have lost a lot of them. 6% of our protein content. My goodness, that's a significant amount, given that it was only 18% in wheat to start with. 15 to 38% of 3 to 5 vitamins, and up to 80% of the copper gone from our food. Where did it go? We're asking Dr. Donald Davis from the University of Texas and also with the Biocommunications Research Institute in Wichita, Kansas. My goodness, you talk, doctor, about two kinds of dilution, of the dilution in our foods. One is environmental and the other is genetic. Let's talk about them both and start with environmental dilution. How does our manipulation of the environment result in the dilution of the food content of our food?
Well, this environmental dilution effect is the one that I was mentioning before, where the fertilizer and irrigation and so forth increases the yield, but the plant can't keep up with the increased yield for the vitamins and minerals, so they end up being diluted.
Well, so during the Green Revolution, the much heralded Green Revolution, what we did is we produced a lot more crops in a lot smaller place with less resources.
Yes.
But we didn't produce more nutrients. We just produced more crop, right?
Yes, that's right.
That's the essential. So what we end up with today, then, if that's the case, is more people eating more food with less food content in it.
Yes, that's right, unfortunately.
Wow. What about genetic dilution, then?
This genetic dilution effect, we've become aware of such a thing only in the last 10 years or so, and the evidence comes out of experiments that have been done now in broccoli, wheat, and corn, or maize, dried corn. What was done in each of these experiments was they took a collection of different varieties of wheat or broccoli that from different times that had different yields. In the wheat experiment, they used 14 different wheats. Some of them went back to 1870.
Where did they find the wheat that went back to 1870?
Some agricultural type people keep samples of these old varieties that were used commercially back then.
Can we buy some at the store?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
If there were sufficient demand, I suppose it would be possible someone could grow these. They're going to be considerably lower yield, mm-hmm. and they're going to be more expensive.
Mm-hmm. And they'll have more food in them.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So anyway, what was done was in this wheat experiment, they planted 14 varieties of wheat that were commercially grown between about 1870 and up to fairly recently, and they measured the concentration of six different minerals in the wheat, and they also measured the yield of the crops, and there was about a two- or three-fold range of yields from high to low, from the old ones to the new ones. And they measured what are called correlation coefficients between yield and the nutrient concentration. How does one relate to the other? And what they found was that in every case that was measured, this was done in two locations in Kansas, in every case there was, as the yield went up, the concentration of the six minerals tended to go down. The trends were quite strong for a few minerals, not so strong for the others. They're not strong enough to be scientifically convincing. You say that there's a chance that they might have happened just by accident, but some of the correlations were so strong, up around 80%.
80%?
Right. 80% correlation between yield going up and the concentration of the mineral going down.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. So, what do people say about this?
Well, most people don't know about it, but you're helping to spread the word, and I think one of the solutions is for people to become aware that there is this trade-off between yield. Heretofore, many people thought, well, it's wonderful that we have higher yields, and they didn't know about the downside of that. They didn't know about the trade-off. So now that we're beginning to become aware of that in the scientific community and public, there will hopefully become a demand for the lower yield, higher nutrient crops, such as your caller was talking about, and a willingness to pay more for them. They are going to probably cost more because it takes more. You don't get such a high yield.
Somehow this is all falling under Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't.
good point.
So what about the other causes of nutrient degradation or dilution? What about, you know, buying crops from the other side of the world and shipping them across the ocean and then eating them here?
Well, this is something that I'm not particularly expert at. I have read a few things. Some people say this is an important cause of loss, but, you know, many nutrients are fairly stable, especially for when you're talking about days and weeks. Mm-hmm. And there's only a few, like vitamin C is probably the best known one, where the levels tend to drop fairly quickly after harvest. It could make a difference if you get really fresh out of your garden or locally grown. But in a lot of other nutrients, it probably doesn't make that much difference.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I have two questions. One is, what are the consequences of eating food with less food in it? And the other is, what does the future hold if we continue heading down this road? Right back. Do stay tuned with Dr. Donald Davis and Michael Olson on The Food Chain. Ladies and gentlemen, we are losing the food in our food. Over the years, we've lost 6% of the protein in our wheat. We've lost 15 to 38% of some of the vitamins in our food. We've lost up to 80% of some of the minerals in our food. Where, oh, where is the food in our food gone? That is the question we've been asking Dr. Donald Davis from the University of Texas. And we were left with a few minutes and a couple of very profound questions. One, what are the consequences of our eating food with less food in it, Dr. Davis?
Well, combined with the fact that we don't exercise as much as we used to and our calorie needs have gone down, it leads to decreased intakes of a broad range of vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and phytochemicals, I might add, that haven't been measured so far, but they go down with the others, probably. We're just getting less nutrition, and I'm pretty sure that this has something to do with the terrible health statistics that we have in this country compared to other developed countries.
Dr. Davis, as we lose nutrients, are we also losing the carbohydrates in food?
No, that's what goes up when the
The carbohydrates go up and the nutrients go down or diluted.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and then we all get fat and wonder why.
Yeah.
Goodness. Now, is there any sign of this nutrient loss diminishing?
I don't think anybody can answer that question. We're just barely able to measure these declines right now. We're in the early stages of being able to do that. And so I don't know that there's any way to measure that. Perhaps the study that I mentioned from England would have some way of answering that. But their measurements, there's a lot of scatter from year to year. And so what they're looking at is trends over of quite a long period of time. And they might have an answer to that question. But I certainly don't, based on my data.
Okay, let's go quickly to James. James, welcome to The Food Chain with Dr. Donald Davis. Michael Olson, go ahead really quickly.
Thank you, Michael. Excellent show. Say, you've been saying 6% of the protein was decreased, but actually you only had 18% protein to begin with, so it's actually a...
I think the correct way to say that would be that we've lost 6% of the protein.
I think you've lost a third of the protein.
Yeah.
6%
as opposed to
80%. I think I can clarify that. The 6% figure comes from some of these studies of groups of fruits and vegetables. The 18% was for wheat back 50 or so years ago, compared to around 12% typically nowadays.
Okay, so then we've lost 30% of the
protein. That's a 30% loss, right.
Okay, good. Thanks for clarifying that, James. Dr. Davis, what does the future hold if we keep losing food in our food?
Well, I don't know. There are going to be some limits. Eventually, the plants are going to become less healthy and will not be commercially viable crops. So that is one limit. I don't know how close we might be to that limit now, but the plants need these things too. And as they go down, I do know, for example, that the modern wheats, they have a problem with germination because they don't germinate as well because they don't have enough of minerals in the wheat to sustain their plant in its early growth.
Dr. Donald Davis, thank you so much for joining us today on the Food Chain, and thank you all out there for joining us. If you didn't get a chance to log on your comments or you want to hear more of the show, you only heard part of it, you can find it all at metrofarm.com. So join us there. Until next week, stay tuned for more What's Eating What Radio. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.